Sale, and this is Living History. This show explores the rich heritage of the Brandywine Valley outside Philadelphia, focusing on the people, places, and events over more than 300 years, which have played an important part in our American heritage. Each show highlights a local town, event, or personality who's had a notable influence on our culture. And before we get started, I want to mention that our call-in line, if you have questions or comments, is 610-701-9243. That's 610-701-9243. This day in history, May 18th. On this day in 1863, Union General Ulysses S. Grant begins his siege of the southern port of Vicksburg on the Mississippi River, a critical stronghold for the Confederacy that would fall to Union troops on July 4th of the same year, delivering a major blow against the rebel forces during the Civil War. In 1920, Karol Józef Wojtyła is born in the Polish town of Wadowice, south of Krakow. Wojtyła became a Catholic priest, and in later years became the Archbishop of Krakow, then controlled by communist forces. He silently opposed the communists, and when asked about them by a reporter, he said, "I am not afraid of them. They are afraid of me." Wojtyła was subsequently elected as Pope of the Catholic Church and would serve for 28 years as Pope John Paul II, assisting behind the scenes in efforts to bring down the communist regimes throughout Europe. And in 1980, Mount St. Helens erupts in the most violent natural explosion in U.S. history, killing 57 people and destroying over 200 square miles of forest nearby. The eruption occurred after a magnitude 5.0 earthquake shook the area, later followed by tremors throughout the region near the mountain, which caused massive landslides that piled debris 150 feet thick for miles around the site, with subsequent pyroclastic explosions shooting 12 miles into the air, scattering ash and volcanic particles around the nation for weeks. Most people are familiar with the fact that General George Washington had many talented commanders and advisors leading and directing troops during the Revolutionary War. Yet most people don't know that many of those troops were black soldiers who volunteered to help fight in America's struggle for independence. Even though blacks were not given equal opportunities or recognition in society, many of them stepped up to the plate and put their lives on the line to fight for liberty. Ned Hector was one of them. Hector was a member of the 3rd Pennsylvania Artillery Unit, which fought at the Battle of the Brandywine, and also later at the Battle of Germantown. Although Washington's forces were routed at Brandywine by the British troops near the Birmingham Meeting House, just up the road from Dilworthtown, Hector refused to abandon his wagon and supplies, heroically saving them from being captured by enemy forces. Noah Lewis has dedicated years of his life in telling Hector's story. He has appeared at numerous events and historical organizations as a living biographer, including the Chads Ford Historical Society's Chads Ford Days, as well as dozens of schools, civic groups, and other entities. In hearing him speak, you learn that Ned Hector was not alone. Thousands of blacks helped America to win the war. Lewis continues to share this story with groups all around the region. Noah is with us today, or perhaps I should say we'll be speaking with Ned Hector. Noah, Ned, welcome to the show.
It's a pleasure, my friend. How are you?
Great, great. Thank you so much for being on the show. You know, I'll always call you Ned. So, Ned, what is your background in history? I think you said to me personally that you don't have any formal training, but have done an enormous amount of research.
That's correct. I do not have a degree in history. My degree actually is in biology. I got a degree in that, and my expertise actually lies in biomedical electronics.
Mm-hmm.
Operated an electronic repair shop for quite a while. But one day I found myself thinking, you know, I don't know why this person's repairing this. It'd be cheaper and faster and smarter to go out and buy a new one. And it was time for the repairman to get out of business.
Yeah.
I started thinking, well, what else do I like to do? And you know, a lot of times we appreciate how much teachers do for our children in their class, but sometimes teachers do a lot more than just teach the students. They teach the parents.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going in helping with my daughter's fifth grade class, and at about the same time I was doing some genealogy research, and I ran across some interesting information that I was sharing with the teacher, and she turned around and asked me one day, Mr. Lewis, would you happen to have anything for colonial America? And about the same time, I came across a book written by Charles Blockson called Black Genealogy. And in it, I read a story about Edward Hector. And, you know, sometimes it's funny how your preconceptions are challenged. My preconceptions of colonial blacks was they all were poor, they all were slaves, and if they were in the military, they were nothing but manual laborers. Well, I read about Ned, and he was none of these. A free man. He was actually with an elite fighting unit, the artillery. He was considered a hero in the Battle of Brandywine. He was so well regarded in his home community of Conshohocken that 16 years, mind you, after his death, about 32 some of the citizens got together with a petition and put it before the council there in Conshohocken and asked to have a street opened and graded and call it Hector Street. And curious enough, they were turned down the first time, and then they came back again, the same petition, and they said, okay, we'll see about doing that. And it became one of the first major projects, Hector Street and several other streets. They floated a bond to start to work on these streets, and we now have Hector Street, which is named after Ned Hector, in Conshohocken, in the middle of around the 1800s, 1850. And I think, you know what's real curious about that? I've asked many of my audiences, how many things do you know named after black people in the middle of the 1800s? And I even put that out to your audience. I don't know of any yet, and I'll be glad to learn of some. But right now, Hector Street is the only one I know that is named after a black historical figure during the middle of the 1800s.
Not many. Yeah, as an historian myself, I have to tell you that I would be hard-pressed to name more than just one or two that were named after black soldiers, politicians, statesmen, and most of those were named, you know, decades later. So that's very interesting. Now, it sounds like you've done quite a bit of research on Hector. I think you mentioned you've been portraying him for, what, about 20 years?
Yeah, about 20 years. As you can guess, I took that teacher's invitation to come and to present something about colonial history. And I told her, well, I just read about this amazing man named Edward Hector. Do you mind if I come dressed out? She said, sure. And that started it. And it was actually down here in Upper Darby, the Bywood School. And I kept being asked to come back year after year. And then finally, one of the teachers said, you know, you've got something, you know, very meaningful here. Maybe you should think about sharing it, you know, more broadly with, you know, other schools and the public. And that's kind of when I took off and started doing this.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not sure if determined. Have you actually found where he was born, where he grew up?
Now, that I have not. One of the more frustrating things about researching history is that sometimes history is very stingy with its information. I've learned, I probably know more than anybody else about that. I guess I'm the expert on you.
Mm-hmm.
But I have not been able to find out where he was born at. I haven't been able to find out who his folks are. And even more frustrating, I don't even know where he's buried. Now, I've got some theories, but that's all they are. They're theories. It's funny because when he dies, he has two obituaries that are written for him. And they're pretty lengthy for that period of time, and especially being a black person during that period.
Mm-hmm.
But they do not name where he was buried at.
Oh, my Lord.
And yeah, it's amazing. I've gone all over the place trying to find out. And like I say, the best I've ever do is come up with theories. And I'm still searching. I'm still searching for that.
Well, that would be fascinating to find out. By the way, my wife, Phyllis Recca, has been doing some research on a lot of the historical structures in the Chester County area that go back over 300 years. And she ran across a website called newspapers.com. And this site focuses on newspapers that almost all of them have actually gone out of business. They're now defunct. Not all of them, but I think the overwhelming majority. But it goes back over 200 years, and some of these papers that have been around at that time. So, you know, that may be a site that you can do some research on. You know, we've got to take a break in less than 30 seconds, but name one very interesting thing about Hector's life that you can share in just a few seconds, and we'll continue right after the break. Name one fascinating thing.
Well, one fascinating thing to me is that he's related to one of the USCT people from Glory Saint, in the movie Glory. The one part portrayed by Denzel Washington, the sergeant.
Yes.
Albanus Fisher.
Yes.
Well, he's related to Edward Hector by marriage.
Interesting.
And I wonder if he became the man he became by growing up in the stories of Edward Hector.
By the way, that movie, Glory, is an outstanding film for our listeners. If you haven't seen it, I highly recommend it. Well, we're about to take a commercial break. But stay with us. We'll be back shortly with Ned Hector talking about the American Revolution and blacks who fought.
Honey, we need a springtime getaway.
A springtime getaway. Somewhere with
amazing food.
Amazing food.
And cozy couples lodging.
Right, but not too far away or
Gettysburg.
Gettysburg.
Yep, Gettysburg.
Okay, but I want
award-winning golf
courses.
Horseback riding. A firkin festival.
How do you know all of this?
They have an app.
They have an app?
Yep, at destinationgettysburg.com.
So, Gettysburg.
Yep, Gettysburg.
Gettysburg, PA. Make your own history.
If you had to choose a roofer, would you choose one with limited experience and knowledge, or would you choose a roofer certified as a master elite contractor by the largest manufacturer in the nation, GAF, a distinction shared by only 3% of the nation's roofers? I'm talking about GP Martini Roofing, who also does siding, windows, doors, and offers an ironclad guarantee that he'll repair or replace any roof for defects within its normal life. GP Martini Services, Chester, Delaware, Bucks, and Montgomery counties, with free estimates and consultation, and does both commercial and residential. Go to their website at martiniroofing.com for special savings, or call 610-873-1696. And also, financing is available with no payments for a full year. Now, what roofer would you call? GP Martini is the answer, 610-873-1696.
This is the Talk of Chester County, 1520 WCHE.
And this is Living History. We're speaking with Noah Lewis, who is a living biographer of Revolutionary War hero Ned Hector, one of the blacks who fought in the Revolutionary War, and an unsung hero of the Revolution. Ned, I know you've done quite a bit of research on this subject. Did he join the army, or was he in the militia?
Both.
Both?
Yes. Proctor's Artillery in 1777 was a Pennsylvania state militia. Now, there's three levels of military. There is the local militia, like, you know, those who come from your community, your neighborhood, your town. There is state militia, which are the ones that are basically the same thing, but on a statewide level. Mm-hmm. And there's a Continental Army.
Right.
So, it's Proctor's 3rd Pennsylvania Artillery. So it's a state militia. And then by the end of 1777, they are now put into or become part of the Continental and become the 4th Continental Artillery.
Okay, so he actually did eventually become part of the regular Continental Army.
Yes, under the 4th Continentals.
Okay, interesting.
Yes.
Now, I know that both the Marquis de Lafayette and Alexander Hamilton were at Brandywine. I wonder if he ran into them.
You know, I often wonder that myself, him and also General Washington as well. I don't know if he did actually run across them, but I do know the position that they were on near Mr. Chad's house up on the hill.
Yes.
It was almost like the center of the battlefield.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if anybody was coming to scout or look at the battle as it was occurring, that would be one of the places they would have gone. If they had gone there, then Ned would have seen them.
Absolutely.
It was not a real big, wide area.
So he was certainly within maybe a few hundred yards of these people, Washington, maybe Lafayette or Hamilton, at some point during the battle.
Yeah, I think it's a possibility.
Yeah. Was he ever wounded?
Not that I know of. I know he wasn't wounded enough that he couldn't save his wagon.
Mm-hmm.
So that much I know.
Now, Hector is listed as being part of the artillery unit. Do you know if Hector actually ever fired the cannons or actually handled the cannons themselves?
Oh, yes. The first mention of Edward Hector is on a mustard roll in 1777, March 10th, 1777. And he's listed as a bombardier.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for those who may not know what a bombardier is, on the artillery, on a cannon, basically is manned by about 7 people. And normally, sometimes different places, it's, you know, different designations. But normally the 3 rear positions of the cannon are bombardier positions. And Ned was a bombardier, which makes sense because he's transporting the gunpowder and ammunition in his wagon. He's probably loading the ammunition box in the back of the cannon, and
mm-hmm.
you know he's probably so he handles the gun. He handles all of that.
Mm-hmm.
It would make him knowledgeable about how the tend and do the jobs. Plus, you know, when you're firing a cannon, somebody goes down, you've got to be able to step right into the position and be able to do whatever job needs to be done. We have a situation of that happening with Molly Pitcher, where her husband becomes wounded at Monmouth, and she steps in and, you know, in a very unconventional way, takes over the position that her husband had.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, he's listed, officially listed, as a bombardier.
Bombardier.
So he is a soldier. A lot of people contend that, well, yeah, he was a teamster, but he wasn't really a soldier. No, he was a soldier. And another reason you know that is that he applies 3 times for his pension.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, as a soldier, he would have done that.
Right.
If he was not a soldier, he wouldn't have.
Now, I know you've done quite a bit of research into blacks fighting in the Revolution, and obviously they fought in virtually every single war Americans been involved with. Tell us a little bit more about all the blacks that were actually involved in fighting in the Revolutionary War. What has your research told you?
Okay. I had some basic facts that I always like to share with my audience first. About 3,000 to 5,000 people of color. The term person of color means anybody not considered white. So that includes Native Americans as well. About 3,000 to 5,000 people of color fight for the American cause. About 7,000 to 10,000 serve the British.
Mm-hmm.
General Washington would actually be the general over one of the most integrated armies all the way up until 1948 when Harry S. Truman would reintegrate the army for Korea.
Fascinating.
Yeah, and what's even more fascinating is that that would take over 150 years to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Be that long before black and whites could be in the same unit fighting the same enemy.
That is fascinating.
Oh, yeah. And General Washington also would be in command of 3 largely black units, one from Massachusetts, one from Rhode Island, and the Bucks of America. And the Marbleheaders from Massachusetts and the Rhode Islanders would actually play quite an important part in our struggle for freedom. Would you mind me kind of telling you, just kind of so that you could have appreciation for what they did?
Oh, sure. Just go ahead and mention that. Sure.
Okay. The battle is not going well up in the New England area. Up in New York, we're losing every battle. We're being pushed downward, down through New York, eventually through Brooklyn Heights. Next thing we know, our backs are up against the river in Brooklyn Heights, and we are trapped. The next day, the British are going to close in. They're going to annihilate this army. They're going to capture this traitor Washington, and that's going to be the end of our fight for independence and freedom. But under the cover of night and fog, men row their boats up. They load his army into the boats. They take them across the river. Some make that trip as many as 11 times at night. What people don't realize is that many of those men who are rowing those boats are black sailors from Marblehead, Massachusetts.
Mm.
It's a port town in Massachusetts. And
interesting.
They save Washington's army from being wiped out.
Mm.
And also, it seems, possibly give General Washington an idea. Do we ever hear about him going across another river? Oh, yeah. The Delaware. I wonder where he got that idea from.
Mm.
Well, these are the same men taking him across that river as took him across the one in Brooklyn Heights.
That is fascinating.
Oh, it really is. And not only do they just they take him across, they also take up their arms and they march down to Trenton and they participate in one of the first significant battles that we win, the Battle of Trenton.
Mm-hmm. Now, Hamilton was there, too.
Oh, yes. And Hamilton comes in at another point, too. By the end of the war, there's a battle called the Battle of Yorktown. By the way, do you know we got spies in the British camp?
I knew we had some spies. Were some of them black men?
Oh, yes. One particular one was a gentleman named James Armistead, and he takes on a extra name in honor of the person he's spying for, Lafayette.
Mm.
He's actually working for Cornwallis. And he learns information that the British are going to go to Yorktown. He gets it out to Lafayette. Lafayette, Washington, they make a plan. They're going to surround the British at Yorktown.
So that was instrumental in our final victory.
Oh, yes, it was. And what's very curious is that Cornwallis, he's no fool. He's a brilliant general. He built fortifications around the outskirts of the city. Now, you're probably wondering, well, why does he have to do that? Doesn't he have a fleet getting ready to come and rescue him? Well, he does not want us to bring our heavy-duty siege cannons close enough to start bombarding the city. So we have to take out two fortifications. First part of the battle doesn't go real well. We kind of get thrown back a couple of times. Finally, Washington calls on one of his best regiments, the Rhode Island Regiment. They send in with their guns unloaded, bayonets fixed, and they take their position in 10 minutes, according to Benson Lossing.
Mm-hmm.
And later on, Hamilton joins them down in that redout that they have taken, that defensive position. The French take out the other one.
Mm-hmm.
We bring up our heavy cannons. We commence with the bombardment of the city, which eventually leads to the surrender of the British. This is where we win the war.
Fascinating.
Oh, yeah.
Fascinating. You've delved quite a bit into the details of black serving in the Revolutionary War, and Ned Hector in particular. What do you feel is most important for people today to know about Ned Hector?
Well, I started off telling you about my misconceptions about colonial blacks. I think that is one of the first places I think we really need to start at, is our misconceptions about what blacks actually did. You see Ned, and Ned is almost like a key to a puzzle. It was for me, at least. I started researching him, and then I started looking at other blacks that lived during that time. And I learned that later on, one of the richest men in Philadelphia would be a black man named James Fortin. Mm-hmm. I learned about how many blacks actually fought on the American side. I learned about there being, largely black regiments. I mean, it was such a different picture than I ever dreamed. And that started changing my attitude. Because a lot of us, and when I say myself as a black person, I remember thinking, well, you know, we really didn't do much during the American Revolution, so why should I be interested in that? Well, that's not the case. Mm-hmm. Literally, without our contribution, we could not have won the American Revolution. Now, that's a big statement, I realize.
I agree with that.
But let me tell you how I build that up. There is a estimate that, like say, about a quarter, 10% to about 25% of Washington's army would be people of color by the end of the war.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you take the size of the army at Saratoga and at Brandywine, and you kind of divide it by, you know, about a quarter, you come up with that 5,000.
Mm-hmm.
What's that? Now, people don't realize General Washington really doesn't win many battles. Let's pretend, just for argument's sake, he fights 10 battles. He fights more than 10 battles, but let's say he fights 10 battles. Now, how many of those do you think he wins?
You know, Washington is misunderstood. He did not win too many battles.
No, he didn't.
No.
maybe out of 10, two or three.
Yeah.
Now,
right.
Take away a quarter of his army. What do you think the chances of him winning are now?
Much lower.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
So, what I tell a lot of my audience, I say, you, in fact, let me just address your audience. You who are out there now listening to this, who are enjoying the freedoms that you're enjoying right now, are enjoying them in part because a lot of black people were willing to fight and die so that you might be free. Now,
absolutely.
I say to them, did you hear me? And, you know, normally they say, well, yeah. And I say, did you really hear me? Because I think it's morally wrong when somebody pays the ultimate price with their lives only to be forgotten by those who are enjoying what that price bought. I mean, that's you and me.
I agree.
That's your
completely.
Audience. That's us Americans.
That is. That's an important part of our heritage, and I think it's something that people need to learn, especially people who say they have a strong interest in history.
Well,
So I'm so glad you brought that up, and you know, we're just about to finish up for the day, and you've really given us a fascinating story. Now, your website is at nedhector.com?
Yes, it is.
People have an interest, go to nedhector.com. Ned, thanks so much for joining us on the show today. Be sure to tune in next Wednesday, May 25th at 1 p.m. Eastern, when we'll be talking with Randall Spackman of Thornbury Farm, CSA, a community-supported farm. Thank you all for tuning in to Living History.